Welcome back to the podcast. This is season 3, episode 2. This will be the non-controversial episode after last week's controversies. But this is, we're going to talk about gear. Now, for those who don't know, and which is anyone who's never listened to this channel before, I'm very anti-gear, but as with all opinions, nothing's ever black and white. So we are going to talk about gear quite heavily today. We're going to get a bit nerdy. We're going to talk about it from a business point of view, or you know, a career-changing point of view, all that sort of good stuff. And today's video is yet again sponsored by me and Rob.
Mostly me.
It's sponsored by me with Studio Access. So Studio Access is our online platform. It's all the stuff, and correct me if I'm explaining this badly, Rob, which is useless to 99% of photographers.
Yeah, I mean, me being an outsider, it's easier for me to quantify because obviously it's your platform, and it's, as I say, for most people, it's of little to no interest or use. But for those, for the one percenters that genuinely want to do this for a career and understand how the mechanics of the business work, it's absolutely brilliant for those
people. And the tech side. I think there's more tech at the moment than business. There is business stuff in there. I've got my agent, art buys in there and stuff. But it's the sort of thing that if I start talking about it, my girlfriend tells me to shut up because I'm boring. So like, for example, if you go on there now, there is a video of me showing you the 5 most trending lighting techniques in commercial photography.
I remember, I shot that.
You did shoot that. There is one of me describing the difference between 4 different reflectors and when I would and wouldn't use each reflector. Same with softboxes. We've got 3 very similar looking softboxes that do 3 entirely different things. And I talked through what, why, when, and all the rest of it. We also did a big walk around the studio as well. And I went through every modifier and why I own it.
And you've got many modifiers.
We didn't go through every modifier. That's a complete lie. We went through all the modifiers that are out. There are many, many more. But today we're going to cover non-photography gear that's really important, the gear that's made the biggest difference in our careers. We're going to talk about lifestyle choices that have made the biggest difference, my most used gear so far in the studio, and how AI is finally helping us photographers. We'll get to that at the end, because otherwise it'll be a massive spoiler in the video. We'll leave that to last. Make sure we don't do that sooner, Rob, because it will it will ruin the entire thing.
So run through this chronologically.
Yes, let's do it chronologically. So obviously, there's a lot of photography gear that us photographers need, but there's a whole host of stuff that we also need or that we also take on set, which is not photography related. I'm sure you're the same, are you?
Pretty much.
Like, there's stuff you need. For example, never go on set without a power bank and a phone charger. Breath mints. Deodorant.
Definitely that. Spare shirt.
Because some days, we shot this ad campaign on the hottest day of the year last year. And it was a video ad campaign. We've got video lights on in a studio with nothing but fans blowing hot air. I went through 3 shirts in the day.
I mean, I learned that back in the day, like shooting weddings. Like, you know, blazing sun, middle of July. By the middle of the day, you got a bit of a dab on.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, well, while everyone's having their wedding breakfast or whatever, there's the time to change your shirt. Towel, that's another good one.
Yeah.
Sort yourself out, deodorize, get back in the game, fresh again.
Little face wipe.
Yeah.
You know, that's all good stuff. Now, the 2 things in photography that I think I spend the most money on are shoes and knives. I don't know what your shoe and knife. I've got my knife in my pocket. Hang on. Let me make this very clear. I'm in the UK. You cannot walk on the street with one of these because it has a locking blade. These are for the workplace only. I do have a Swiss Army knife.
Which is actually quite useless.
It's compared to these. Every set will have somebody with one of these in it. If your assistant or gaffer doesn't have one of these, you need to be worried. Because this is the tool. And yes, you can carry a Swiss Army knife anywhere with you in the UK. I've always got a Swiss Army knife about my person because you never know when you're going to need to Swiss something. But this is the tool. This is the tool you want. Now, these are probably only going out as video podcasts going forward because nobody really listens to them in podcast land. Then we get like 100 views an episode. And it's a lot of rendering effort, but we'll get to that at the end. But this here is my... I've got to hold it the right way around because my phone number's on one side of it. There we go. This is my Leatherman Wave Plus. The pliers alone are worth the price. It also has the perfect size tool in it to do your tripod plate and your tether capture plate. The knife is sharp, as my finger once found out. It has a beer bottle opener, very important for the end of the day. I put my name on one side and my number on the other because everybody has the same goddamn tool. You must own a multi-tool.
I have a Leatherman, strangely enough.
Oh, do you?
I do, yeah.
Which one do you have?
I bought the titanium one.
Yep, that's better, isn't it?
Well, it just seemed like a fancy idea.
Did you get a leather pouch?
No, I've got the canvas one, the tactical pouch.
Now, these are made in...
And mine also slips in the screwdriver bits. So I can carry the tool and the screwdriver bits in the same case.
My screwdriver bits have to be carried separately.
I see. So that's why you buy the tactical pouch.
They're in my car,
top
actually.
Top tip there for anybody watching.
But this, yeah, I mean, this is a made in America leather pouch and Leatherman tool.
It's very nice.
It's
just less functional.
Yes, it's less functional, but it's very beautiful. I do like made in America leather goods.
And also, on the subject of knives, some great knives come out of America.
They do indeed, actually. Also, like Red Wing shoes, which brings me through to the next thing I spend money on, shoes. As a photographer, doesn't matter what genre you're shooting, you will spend an unforgiving amount of time on your feet. If you work commercially, you might as well be shooting outside in the UK because you're on a concrete floor almost certainly, and the heat goes from the feet down. So I wear Australian boots called Blundstone. I used to be a Doc Martens wearer.
They're not so good now.
They're not so good now. They used to be really good.
Now, I'm going to give a top tip here. This is just something a friend of mine put me onto. There's a really cool brand. There we go. Solivair.
Yep.
Are the people that used to work for Doc Martens when Doc Martens were built properly, now building the boot the way Doc Martens used to build them, and they're wonderful. So shout out to Solivair.
Yep. You know what? I'll look into those. Now, one of the reasons I went Blundstone are not the best shoe. They're the most comfortable shoe. There is zero break-in. You can put a brand new pair on and they feel like you've worn them for 10 years.
Yeah, you're not being attacked by sharks and piranhas for about the first week while you bed them in.
Much like a Doc Martin, they're not Goodyear welted. So you can't change the sole. So once the sole's gone, it's gone. However, you get about 5 years wear out of them and they're less than £200.
Yeah, I mean, which is a deal.
So I've currently got six pairs on rotation.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to go more down the... I quite like... Adidas or Adidas, depending whether you're hip hop or not. And I find that the superstars, particularly the shell toes, are the most comfortable things. And I mean, I was a big Converse fan, and they're just not comfortable anymore.
Converse are not comfortable.
I mean, you know, they look nice. I adore the way they look. I personally have found that the comfort level has changed over the last decade, at least.
Yeah.
And I kind of found my way almost full circle from when I was a kid back to the shell toes. And you know, Adidas, you're still doing it right. I like it.
Do you know, I like wearing trainers, but not when working. I don't know why. I always feel like a work boot is the right choice for working. I'm sure it really doesn't matter, but it's just how I don't know. I just feel like if I've got my boots on, I'm at work.
I mean, there is a thing. If you turn up on set, particularly the price level you work at, if you turn up in trainers, there's a certain...
Unless you turn up some funky New Balance, that's quite acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not my personal favourite sneaks either, but I kind of get it.
Yeah, they're quite trendy in ad world, New Balance are. But yeah, I mean, everyone wears, again, go on set, and if you're like Sparkies and stuff aren't rocking one of these, and a set of Blundstones, that's probably an issue there.
Yeah.
It seems like industry standard in the UK. I don't know what, maybe in the States would be Red Wing shoe. I really want some Red Wings, but they have laces on them. And I have a dog that needs to go out frequently.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, lacing up shoes, unlacing all the rest of it, I'll just bang these on. I mean, you know, they're comfortable. They're easy. There's no shoelaces.
But, you know, footwear is important. I think
footwear
is key. That's the takeaway.
Now, other good things I bring on set are electrolyte tablets. Because unless you've got Paul Bonning tyres assisting you, making sure you're constantly hydrated, you will get dehydrated. Dehydration causes bad decisions. So always one of those. Always paracetamol, aspirin, ibuprofen, maybe something a bit stronger. If you
see, as you know, I've like never had any of that as an adult.
No, you don't do medicine.
I don't know. And it's worked out okay so far.
That's probably a good thing. I mean, you know, ibuprofen's awful for your insides. But you know, these things I do think, like good shoes, good multi-tools, they make such a difference on set.
Yeah, again, it's things that you don't consider, because everyone obviously always wants the camera, the lens, the lights. But then all these other little things just do make life easier, because there's always going to be a day when something breaks and something's fell off a tripod or whatever it happens to be, that you now need to MacGyver something.
Well, we had the issue that we had to take the tripod head off that tripod and the little gubbin screws underneath it were tightened in. But I'd got a tool, so we just got
it out.
Got
a tool for that.
Got a tool for that. Out it came. Didn't have to go and look for a screwdriver in the studio. I mean, we have every tool on display in the studio, but ready to go. Like, need an angle grinder? Go ahead. It's plugged in. It's ready to go.
It's there for a reason that it has been used at least once.
Yes. Yeah. Everything there is used regularly. But, I do think shoes and a multi-tool are something every photographer in every genre should be investing in.
Yeah. And again, spare clothing,
a little bit of medication. Always making sure there's a cold beer in the fridge when you get home.
You see, you and I have different views on that. Only because I'm trying to do better and stuff. So I don't, like, I allow myself one day a week now on the
booze. Pot. Well, we had this issue when, first time I got a big job in my old studio, which was then your studio, we all had beers afterwards downstairs. I bought everyone, I don't know, probably about £100 worth of beers. Next time we did a big job, did the same. Then we started getting big jobs more often. So I was like, right, we can't afford to be spending the money in the bar. We'll buy beers for the studio.
Studio beers, yeah.
So we got a beer fridge. And then there was a point where it was probably at the time of the Dave Comedy Festival. We were shooting every day.
Yeah, and deliverables were by like 6 a.m. the following morning.
But I was still having 6 pints after every shoot. So we had to put a bit of a stop on that. Luckily, nowadays, I don't shoot as often, so the beers after shoot days are not as... I mean, we don't count this as a shoot day. There's no beers after this. This is just day in the office, I suppose.
Yeah, because there's no pressure. I mean,
I'm
very much a task reward, and obviously, depending on the job, it's quite stressful. So once that's done, you're like... You know, and you have to take that time to decompress.
Yeah, I mean, some of the really big jobs in London, we have a couple of beers, and I'm... And this is not good behavior. I'll preface it with this, but I'm straight on the like tequila chasers and pints of beer afterwards, just to try and come off the high.
See, it's the chasers, man. That's what I was going to get you. Like, regard, for the most part, unless you're into like your 13% stouts, if you're drinking like a premium beer, I mean, my personal favorite is Asahi.
I like Asahi.
It's just crisp, clean, nice. But there's a certain amount of time it takes to drink a pint of liquid. Now,
about
shots,
3.4
it takes
seconds
no
me.
Time. Wallop, you know. And that's the thing, like, you're like, why am I absolutely hammered? Oh, wait, I've had 18 Jager bombs, that's why. And 4 pints. I had 4 pints last night, what's wrong with you, Rob?
So in the UK, there is very much, for decades, been a drinking culture in the country. And I'd say at the height...
I'd argue centuries.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a tavern nation, let's be honest.
At the height of our drinking culture is probably finance and advertising. And it's just like, you know, you go out for lunch for an advertising meeting and you get back at 4 in the morning. And it's getting less like that now.
Because budgets are tighter and...
No, people don't drink. Hmm? Like, you know, you take a photographer out to sign them up and they don't drink. It's a quick lunch. Take a photographer out for, you know, take me out to sign me up to your agency and we're there for the long haul.
If you want to sign me on a Saturday night, mate, you know, we'll soon change that metric. Sure, yeah.
So, you know, Pete and I go for lunch.
It gets boozy.
I need a hotel afterwards. But yeah, I think, yeah, we had to stop that. And now we do have, like, the fridge over there, it's got, what's in it at the moment? Beers, champagne and vodka, as all studio fridges should have.
What is he introducing me to this week? In fact, Lizzie's?
Oh, Lizzie's. It's actually a De Bonnet. It's normally a French... This is my drink of choice at the moment. So it's like a French version of Italian vermouth and gin. So the vermouth is the mixer and the gin's the spirit. But what I do is I take Italian red vermouth, 2 shots of that, 1 shot of gin. I shake it, but then I pour it over ice and have a slice of orange in there. Or sometimes if I'm feeling really naughty, I put a bit of anchovy brine in it, ooh, bit of Tabasco, and a whole anchovy. And that's pretty banging. I'm into that.
We never tried one, but you know.
Next time you're
in, try most things once.
Yeah, we'll sort you out with some. I'll be making. So it was Queen Elizabeth's drink of choice, apart from my variation to it. So we call them Lizzie's at home because it's not the true drink that it should be. It should be served in a martini glass without ice and all the rest of it. But I like mine on ice, and I like it with a little twist, and that's my drink of choice. Although I do love a vermouth, just a straight up vermouth. Or a mix of red and white vermouth. When you're in Spain, you just have one of those.
I remember the brands when I was growing up. It was like that was all over the TV.
Yeah, martini.
Yeah.
I mean, their vermouth is not particularly good. There's much better vermouth. There's much better vermouth in the studio. Actually, we've got some really expensive stuff hiding on the workshop bench for some reason. But I do enjoy a little post work drink.
Yeah,
but it's important
just taking time to. And settle yourself before you get onto something else.
Yeah. I did a shoot last week. I was broken after it, and it's so being an introvert, I was on set. It was a producer I'd never met, a art director I'd never met. The only person there I knew was Paul. Every other member of crew and post and everything else was all new people, and I'm not particularly sociable. So by the end of the day, I pretty much hated myself. Spent the rest of the evening replaying everything I said and why they'd think I'm an absolute dick, would never want to work with me again. 24 hours later, can we book you in next week?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they do like me. This is okay. But like, you know, that is the way. And yes, there's better ways of dealing with it than having a drink after work. However.
you have alluded to on previous podcast episodes that, it does grease the wheels. Especially in this industry.
It does grease the wheels in this industry. Now, I'm not going to tell that story. We'll leave it there before we get demonetized. It used to be far worse in this industry than a few beers after work, but it's definitely not that bad nowadays. Now, Into Gear, which is what I tell everybody, and this one goes, you say gear doesn't matter, and then you say this. Nothing's black and white. Nothing's just like, it's all this or it's all that. There's obviously a relative sliding scale to everything. I can't think of many things that are black and white, apart from black and white.
Pandas.
Zebras. but the gear that has made the difference in my career in terms of making me better at my job can be really boiled down to a few choice items. I think the one that's had the biggest impact and that's allowed me to get the heroic hero shots I get in the way that I get them, is using a Cambo.
Yeah.
Having a technical camera instead of just a tilt shift lens, which is what we used before that point, allows me to get shots that nobody else can. And I think they're what, £3,000, £4,000?
Yeah, which seems a lot for something with no electronics attached to it.
Yeah, nicely geared though. And made in the Netherlands. I don't think my career would be where it is today had I not learned how to use one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, obviously, I've known you for, 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You were such a big fan of those Canon tilt shift lenses. You had the 45 and the 90, was it?
Yeah, 45 and the 90. Yeah.
Like, and you used those like every opportunity.
But they were so difficult to use because they're so small and fiddly, and the limitations were insane.
And then that's basically one of those on steroids.
Yeah, with additional stuff that tilt shift lenses can't do. So that is definitely, I think, the biggest one for me.
Yep.
Followed by Broncolor lighting.
Yeah.
The quality of light I have is something that agents have commented upon when wanting to sign me. And yes, a lot of it is technique, but some of it is money.
There is. And now, in terms of your portfolio shot, I would argue that you could have used something other than Broncolor. I mean, a lot of it is, was shot on Boeings, like the stuff that's got your bookings and what have you.
Yeah.
But when you're on set, and this is the important thing, and again, being in the back room retouching, I've clocked this like for so many years now, since you've been on the Broncolor bus, as we're going to call it.
The Bron bus
is the shot to shot consistency of color and exposure. You've never had that with any other lighting system that you've used. You just haven't.
Yeah, I'd fully agree with that, and I do think the light is better. Like, I know people say light is light. Light is not light.
No. Again, there's there's the little X factor. That, is it pleasing?
Yeah.
Now, the exposure's the same, but is that light as pleasing as this one?
Mm-hmm.
And again, importantly, it's completely repeatable across 100 frames.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think, you know.
Build quality and all the rest of it, that's great. But that doesn't really change the final outcome, but the quality of the modifiers does.
Yes.
And the reflectors that Broncolor make are better than any reflector that anybody else makes in terms of a metal construct.
Yeah.
There are better reflectors, soft reflectors, by other brands that are insanely expensive. But I think between the Cambo and the Broncolor lighting, that's probably the two biggest items.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely turned it up to 11.
Yeah, like I could go back to my Canon full frame sensor instead of medium format Fuji and it wouldn't have a major impact on my career. I could not go back to a tilt shift lens.
No, whereas you could keep the Fuji and go back to the Bowens lighting and tilt shift lenses and you'd be nowhere close.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about you? What's for video? What's the being the...
Oh, 100%. And is the move to Blackmagic.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, I mean, I used to shoot on Canon. Still got them. I still use them for photos. Still work. Is the Canon 6Ds.
Yeah.
And I still remember plain as day, the day I knew that that was that. And I believe this is the only... Well, two times you should upgrade your gear. One, when it breaks. And B, when creatively you're limited by it. Like, you've got an idea in your head and your kit can't do it for you. I remember I was booked to do an ad campaign for a headphone company and, you know, like a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, honestly.
So I was doing the advert for the Kickstarter, which is quite important if you're trying to kickstart something. Like, you know, you need a good advert or no one invested in that. And I wanted to do some, like, fancy slow-mo. Now, the Canon 6D is a wonderful stills camera, decent in normal frame rate in 1080p, horrible in slow motion. It's like... 720, it's now interlaced, and the moire, oh my god, like just hideous. So again, I'm like, right, I know what I wanted to do and I can't do it with this piece of kit now. And as luck would have it, they just launched the Pocket 4K and I'm like, ooh, this looks interesting, let's get myself down for one of those. I had to wait 3 months for it, which was really short at the time.
I remember you waiting for it. Yeah.
But at the time there was anything up to a year waiting list. Now my first one, which is that one, the one on Scott Camp.
Over hither, this one.
Came from a rental house on Pinewood Studios. We thought, what a lovely story. That's my first, like, and the first time I shot with it in slow motion, I was like, my God, it looks exactly the same as the normal. Like that shouldn't be a thing. But
yeah.
Just considering the chalk and cheese on the Canon. And then it took me genuinely a good year to learn what this camera like, because everything now was backwards. So you shoot with a DSLR and you want to be on the lowest ISO possible. Not necessarily the case. It depends on whether you're in bright or dark, or like an understanding.
Dual native ISO.
All of this sort. No, even on the standard ISO band. It's like, if things are really bright, you want to be at like 800 ISO. And you're like, hang on, that's wrong, surely. No. Things are really dark, you want to be on 100 ISO. You're like, what? Because you understand that the distribution of the 13 stops of dynamic range, at low ISOs, you've got more in the shadows, and mm-hmm. at high ISOs, you've got more in the highlights. So then it's like, but isn't it always technically shoots at 400? Like, I couldn't get my head around it. So it took me a good year to learn what the camera likes, if that kind of makes sense. And then I went, then deep dive down the rabbit hole of trying to become a colorist. And understanding how much you can push the raw, you know, my personal work is quite pushed. I think it's probably fair to say, like, there's no dispute. There's a heavy, heavy grade on it, and it just didn't break up, and everything looked great. And I'm like, oh my god, I love this. And then I bought another one, so I've got a matching one. And again, you have to have two matching cameras at all times, I think, generally speaking.
That's interesting, because I've always had a minimum of two matching cameras. Mm. Until last year, and now I don't have a single matching camera. I've got one video and one video camera only. I've got one stills camera only, and that's it.
Yeah, but you don't turn up on set with just the one, do you?
No.
Right.
Yes. But like for test shoots, I do. I don't have backup for test shoots. We just, I don't know. I mean, I probably should do, but...
No, I mean, but dare I say it, the worst that's going to happen is that it's you as the client is disappointed if the test shoot goes wrong.
Yeah.
It's not a client paying you money to deliver something that you now can't because you only had the one bit of kit on set.
Yeah, still with a financial hit though.
Oh yeah, you take the hit in the wallet because you're bankrolling everything. And generally speaking, I can't speak from experience here, you buy everybody like nice lunches, like Grounded Kitchen, and you know.
Oh yeah, we don't cheap
fancy
house.
Stuff like that when you're doing a test shoot, you know. So, you know, I know it's a pricey day out, and you know you want to get the most value out of it that you can.
Yes, I think some of my test shoots have been more expensive than my entire earnings in a year in my early days.
If you rack them up over the year, yeah, for sure.
No, like one day.
Yeah.
We've been thousands in on some of the test shoots. Like, yeah, your average, so I don't know if people know this or not, excuse me if you do, the average shoot for a cheap, like cost of a cheap test shoot, like if you rein it in as tight as you can, is $2,500.
Yeah, that's about right.
That is cheap as chips. You want to do a good test shoot, you're looking between $8,000 and $10,000 for the day.
Yeah. But again, that's your shop window.
Yeah, that's where my money goes. That's my advertising budget.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we talk about it a lot on the podcast that you have to invest in personal work because that's what gets you booked. Like you say, and you've said it many times, nobody wants to see you doing a McDonald's style advert. They want to see, what do you do?
Yes, exactly.
So right, now I've seen you do that, I want you to do this.
Yeah, it's definitely that way, I think. You know, it's still that way, and it's always going to be that way. And if anything, with AI, it's more that way. But yeah, I think we've frozen on this camera up ahead. We've destroyed a camera. We might leave this in. This is the reality of doing a of self-filming. So currently our monitor's gone out over there. So we're just... Rob's seeing if you can fix it. The camera's still rolling though, so...
Yeah, kudos to Blackmagic.
Critters Black Magic. Shimbol, on the other hand. Come on, you good boys. Let's bring it back. We're getting action. It's loading. Oh, it's not happy, is it? It's not happy. This is always the way.
It's got a bit brighter. Something's happening.
Something's happening, but it's not showing. Oh, we're back.
Oh, we're back.
I'm back. Hi, guys. We're back. Come on, Rob. Come and join us. What was I saying? Oh, great. I've lost my mojo. I've lost my moment. What were we saying?
You're suddenly interrupted. Sorry, I got distracted by the tech not working.
Yeah, I got distracted by cameras not working. Well, actually, it was just a monitor that wasn't working. The camera gear has been ragged. I don't think people realise how battered pro kit gets.
Well, I mean, if it's not held together with gaffer tape and a prayer, you're not working professionally. That's what
it is. Pretty much. It's like, I mean, even the batteries, there's a battery and a camera over here that you can't see. It's got tape holding it together because there's a hole in the battery. I mean, you know, some people are really, with their kit, everything's pristine.
No, I mean, I do not. Remember going on a wedding shoot with you to Normandy. We went to Normandy. It was in the south of France.
Yeah.
And we got, and there was me unclipping everything, placing my stuff. And you were like, ain't got time for that, Rob. You just chuck your 5Ds in and my heart broke. Like, you mean, I'm like, oh, you can't.
I think now I work in a studio, I'm a bit more careful.
Yeah,
because
but in those days it was like,
there's a chance of a camera never having a scratch on it from here.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing, you know, that are, again, it's been in more in the video world, cages.
Yeah,
brilliant.
They take a lot of the beating.
Yeah, you know, so they'll take a lot of the hit. I mean, to the point where I've had like that big rig with the big lens and the matte box, a broken £80 matte box instead of a £1,000 lens. So I'm like, I'll take that.
I'll tell you what, you keep them going. Let me go and grab a bit of kit to show you guys just how battered stuff gets. So Rob, talk on the spot.
Oh, wow. So this will be interesting because, again, Scott never actually tells me what we're doing when we get here. It's always, right, Rob, here's what we're doing. You know, you've got to shoot on the fly. And this is another example. Again, this could have been anything. It could be a pocket wizard. Because we tried to do the clicky thing and the AI removed all the clicks. So that didn't really work out too successfully.
So here, what I've got here is another bit of Shimbol kit. Just to show you what we're dealing with. Now, I don't know if it's going to come across okay on here, but this is not straight. This has got some serious bend to it. It's also held together with tape and there's parts missing from it, but it works. And can you see how bent that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is bent.
It'd be having a slant.
This here is, so this was on the side of a camera, as you can see, because the threads all smashed in. And the camera fell and landed on this. So I taped it and glued it back together again. It still works. It's still being used on set. We used this on set last week and it was fine. I mean, I know a lot of people, oh God, it's like metal showing in the threads.
Yeah.
A lot of people would have seen this and gone, yeah, I'll buy a new one. That's unprofessional, Scott. But I'll just go, the money's better sitting somewhere else than it is in kit. I mean, it shouldn't be able to do that on a table. It's currently wobbling back and forth.
That's pretty much not how it left the factory.
That is not factory standard, but it credit to Shimbol on this one. It still works. And also, these have always worked flawlessly.
Yeah, actually, there was the more expensive one was the one you had issues with.
Yeah, I ended up selling those. I got given some more expensive ones. They went on eBay. But yeah, this was cheap. Well, it was free, actually. But Yeah, it's a good bit of kit. Keep using it because it keeps working.
Yeah. Again, you know, tape and a prayer, man, it'll get you going. You know? Yeah. There's like certain things like I use the Tilta Nano for my follow focus system on my static rig. Now, if anyone that's used the original one, the one with the wooden handle, it's literally impossible in anything other than pitch black to see what's on that screen.
Oh, God, it's infuriating.
But I still use it because I cannot justify replacing it until it breaks.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I'm always willing it to, but I don't really want to spend £300 on the new one. But again, it's going to have to happen at some point. But for now, that's going to keep on trucking until it doesn't.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they say, why are you still using that? I'm like,
Because it still works.
When it stops working, I'll buy another one. But I'm not just upgrading stuff.
Again, it's like when the DC port on that camera stopped working. Like, I mean, I remember being on the, I was like, when I was shooting my first film, actually, Open Up. And I was on literally the last scene of the day and the camera just died. I'm like, ugh, put a new battery in it. Dead. I'm like, I know these were charged.
Yeah.
Took me a while to figure out what was going on. And then fortunately, I just happened to have kicking them out in a bag, a Canon LPE6, which lasted long enough to shoot that 30-second
clip. They don't last long in those cameras, do they?
I mean, that was about it. That was about the maximum. It was about that 30 seconds. And then figured out that the DC port basically was shorting the batteries back to the plate. It wasn't the plate causing the problem. The DC port had gone. And of course, contact Blackmagic. Oh, yeah, it's about £500 to fix that. It's all right. That seems a lot.
Yeah, seems
deep.
And
then like, okay, you're not actually fixing it. You're just going to chuck the board away and put a new board in it, aren't you? I'll take that £500, put some more money with it and buy a second camera that works properly for now. And I'll deal with the limitations of that, which is why that runs on a V-mount through a dummy battery because I can't use the DC port. That one runs happily on the DC port. And when using LPE6s, through the DC port lasts twice as long as it does through a dummy battery.
Perfect.
That's a hot tip for anyone with a broken Blackmagic.
Oh, that's a niche bit of knowledge.
Right.
It's like the,
and it makes your friends at parties with that one.
Yeah,
yes, I'm in the kitchen all alone.
Yeah. Speaking about being in the kitchen, now, in terms of my career path, this is a strenuous link, but bear with me. In terms of my career path, it went slowly, averagely, and then skyrocketed. And there were some key lifestyle choices I made throughout this. And I hope I don't preach them, but I try and impart them on as many people as possible because it made such a big difference to me. So when I was doing particularly not well in photography, I was particularly unhealthy. I also partied particularly hard. I would think nothing of going out all hours the night before a shoot. Which I know some of you are going, well, obviously that's a bad idea, but it is quite normal in our industry, especially with the pre-shoot dinners. And I would, you know, I wouldn't exercise. I would just eat whatever crap I wanted. I wouldn't keep like good sleep hygiene. So I'd just go to bed and wake up whenever, often feeling absolutely awful. Whereas today, I am a very different person. I drink no more than once a week, unless photo shoots, and often not at all in a week. I do my 10,000 steps a day with the dog in the sunlight, which is nice. I go to the gym every other day doing weights. I have a reasonably strict diet. I don't do the party stuff. And I go to bed at 10 p.m. on the dot. Like, try phoning me at 5 minutes past 10. There's no one there.
It's not happening.
And I wake up every day, regardless of if it's a day off or not, at 6 a.m. because I don't need to catch up on sleep at the weekends because I get enough sleep every day. And I know that you're on a bit of a health kick at the moment, Rob. I have been for a while.
Yeah, about 6 months in now.
6 months in. And difference?
Well, I'm almost near my first mini goal.
Yep.
It's like annoyingly like 0.9 of a kilo away from it. I'm like, oh, it's just so close. Many things I feel so much better about. I mean, A, obviously losing a bit of pudding is no bad thing. And not a small amount either, by the way. So I'm eating so much better
like,
in terms of the quality of food. I mean, I've always kind of scratch cooked, but, you know, I didn't look after myself for the longest amount of time. So while I've been doing that, that's been great. As I found out on my birthday weekend in Whitby, I cannot eat anything like as much as I'd like to anymore. Like, you look at, like as I was saying, a plate of fish and chips, now the best in the country, debatably. And I was like halfway through and I was like,
Done.
I'm stuffed, mate. I'm like, anything beyond this point is gluttony, and I'm going to be walking around for the rest of the day needing a lie down. So I just had to like tap out and like, look, I can't eat it. It's delicious, but I can't eat any more of it. And there's a couple of things that have been interesting about the whole sort of weight loss. Now, as you know, part Viking, impervious to cold, don't own a coat.
Yep.
Now, with a caveat, I did go out on a boat into the North Sea to have a little fly around the harbour in a t-shirt at the end of March in Whitby. Now, everybody was in like, basically stuff you could walk to Alaska in snowshoes. And there's me on a boat with a thing. But I mean, you've seen me like covered in snow and just pushed it off like not a thing. And for the first time in recent memory, I was cold. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I can't eat like I used to. And now I'm starting to feel the cold. Like it's my superpowers waning. Like, yeah. what's occurring here? So that's been good for me. I've been exercising, as you know. I try and get on my bike when I can. And it's a great bike for exercise and a terrible bike for moving to and from places because it's a dual suspension mounted bike. So yeah. 80% of your inertia is lost in the suspension. So it's good because you've got to put in work to get anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do that. And I've been working out my total gym, you know, pre-bod Chuck Norris. So you know that's good, right?
That's another one.
Yeah, this is why, you know, Chuck Norris never did comedy because no one could survive the punchline. Hey. Boom. I'll be here all week. Thank you very much. The thing I still struggle with and have always in as an adult actually is sleep. It's the one thing I've never been able to conquer. I mean, I've been an insomniac now for 20 odd years. I mean, if I get 4 hours a night, I can rule the universe. 3, I'm okay. Anything less than that, I struggle. But that's the one thing I've never, ever been able to like lock down and get into a regimented pattern of is sleep. And so that's kind of the one thing. And that, again, dials into if you're trying to lose weight, you need to sleep.
Yes, you do.
You know, you think, well, while you're asleep, actually your body does really good things when you're asleep.
Yes, it also, if you don't sleep enough, it holds on to fat stores.
Yeah.
Because it thinks you're in trouble. Sleep is one of the most underrated things. I go for 7 hours sleep a night because it's not practical for me to get 8 hours sleep with my work schedule and the timings that I have to do things at. But most days I have a half an hour nap at 1 p.m. Hmm. Also, if I'm at 1 p.m., you won't get an answer.
Power nap time.
I would just get up every day with my dog. Just like lay down together, have a little nap. And I think the work I produce being well-rested is better than having been out all night. And I think the big thing for me was I was out at London Fashion Week a few years back, this was.
Is that the one you did the photo set that I remember on film?
No, that was in Paris. This was, I was just out there, just going to shows. And I stayed with my best mate in London and we partied hard at uni. And I was like, right, once I'm done with the networking side of things, we'll go out. Now, I'd already been out all of that day on it. And then we went out and we got on it. And the next day he had to phone in sick to work. And the following day he had to phone in sick to work. Whereas the following morning at 6:30 a.m., I was up and I was doing emails. And he was like, how are you okay? And I was like, this is not right. This is not the, it should, like, we used to pretty much be on a par with each other if we went out. Whereas this time I was like, yeah, I've gone too far because his hell is my normal.
Mm.
And that's never, and I'm in a really stark moment of going, yeah, I think I party too much. The fact that he's nearly dead and he's throwing up and laying on the floor in the fetal position and I'm absolutely fine.
I mean, that's a whole different kind of kettle of fish, really. I mean, it's like, I like a drink as much as the next man.
Yep.
If the next man was Ollie Reed.
Yeah.
You know, and I now, as you know, limit myself to like one night a week out. And I try, depending on what I've got work schedule wise, I try and make that a guilt-free night where, you know, as again, you can't go out on the booze the night before if you're trying to do a competent job and someone's paying you know, the check and all the rest of it. So I try and arrange my month that I get at least one night, be it a Friday or a Saturday. And in this case, it's tonight. Because I'm doing this today, so, you know, I'll come correct with it. And kind of make that a thing. But I've never, like, done the dry annuary or any of that stuff. I've always, I mean, you know, I've lost, like, you know, nearly 3 stone in 6 months while smashing down 20 pints on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
That is a diet anybody can stick to. So there's hope for everybody out there if you do that.
Yeah,
the reality is I probably have hit my target weight had I not been doing that.
Yeah, there's a lot of calories. We used to get on the skinny bitch, which is the, I don't know if it's just a London thing only, but the soda water and vodka.
The problem is I drink liquid too quick. I'd be honestly smashing down that, like, pints of it.
It was bad.
You know, so, you know, I like to stick with Sahi, generally speaking.
Yep.
And then when we go to the late one, Kronbacher, that's, you know,
yeah,
good old
pills. I think, like, living a cleaner life, like, there's, when I started in photography, the fact that if you put your profession down as a photographer on your car insurance, it, like, my first year's car insurance as a professional photographer was $2,500.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think the only thing that costs more is possibly journalist or racing driver.
Yeah.
It's the only categories that are higher than that in terms of insurance.
It was so,
metric.
Like, all my mates are, my car insurance was like 700 or something, it's $2,500.
Yeah.
Because of my career and because photographers, on the most part, are reprobates. And it's a high party profession, and I fell into that trap for sure, as you well know. And I partied hard, and it did me zero favors. It actually did me a lot of damage, both career-wise, socially, relationships.
What I will say, I mean, had you not done that, I don't know if you'd have been where you are, because you've now got that to look back on and know not to do that again.
Well, that's true. I now know.
You know, I mean, yes. I mean, I've seen the evolution of Scott, yes, over the years. I think it's fair to say. I've seen debatably the worst of you and the best of you.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say within a 12-year span.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a slightly worse version of me before we met, but we shan't mention that. But yeah, I think the lifestyle choices you make have such an impact on, like, there's the odd, and this is why people do it, or at least why I did it. You go, well, you know, you look at so-and-so in their heyday, they were doing this, they're doing that. They're a one-off.
Yeah.
A one-off.
It's like James Hunt, famously as a racing driver. You can't do that now. They're like jockeys.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
But
who's that
day,
golfer who drinks like a case of beer before?
Oh, and I remember in the snooker, you had, I think it was Bill Werbenick. And he used to have like 20 pints before he'd go on and play a match, and then they banned alcohol, and he had to go on beta blockers, and then they banned beta blockers.
Yeah.
They considered that a PED. And it was like, and that was the end of his snooker career. It's like, just.
But like, they're a one off.
Yeah.
It's not, the norm is not
it's the
to
exception,
be
not
an
the
absolute reprobate. And
Alex
that's
Hurricane
the way
Higgins, there was, there
yeah,
was,
yeah, yeah,
there. There was always snow on the pitch when the hurricane was there.
Like Maradona with his special bumps after scoring goals.
Yes.
And.
But yeah,
one-offs. It's the exception that proves the rule, not the rule.
Not the other way around. I mean,
yes.
If you look at sports in general, I mean, you look at footballers now, that's a finely honed machine, same with racing drivers,
yeah,
et cetera.
But as a kid, footballers in the 90s were balding men who went out and drank 20 pints on a Friday night.
I mean the only last bastion of that lifestyle, professional darts.
Yeah.
still there.
Still on it.
I mean, remember Alas Smith and Jones?
No.
Oh, mate, there was such a great skit where they did basically darts, but with drinking. And
yeah.
And he steadies it up.
Oh, no, oh. I do, yeah. Or is a triple vodka tonic.
It's honestly,
and that was a great sketch.
Completely accurate
yes.
to the time period as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like sports have evolved. I think, you know, that kind of behavior, just like you say, just is now very much the exception and almost obsolete.
Yeah.
From almost all walks of life.
And I don't think it's the same in the States, the culture and advertising, as it is in the UK, the party culture.
No.
I think it's similar in New York. But it's definitely not the same. So we work with a lot of New York clients, but it's not the same. It's a very British thing to be spannered. Like, we used to go out at lunchtime and get on it and then come back to the studio.
Yeah.
Honestly, you look back and you go, why would we do that when there's like 50 grand on the line?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them, when you know better, you do better.
Yeah, I suppose so. So from lifestyle choices, which I reckon, and I know people don't want to hear this on a photography channel, I just recommend you just get your life in order. Like, good sleep, good diet, good exercise.
Still working on the sleep thing. It's kind of my last thing
There's things you can do there to help with sleep. But yeah, it's so much information online nowadays. It's just do it. You'll thank yourself later. And also when you get older, you'll just feel better in life.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get much older than me at this point. So, yeah. I mean, I don't have to much have birthdays. I have to be carbon dated every year.
Yeah. It's interesting. So I see two men regularly who are siblings, and he both chose very different lifestyles. They're the same age, and you'd assume there's a 15-year age gap. That's how it is. But let's talk about the most used gear, because you look around my studio on these videos and you'll see loads of gear everywhere. It's just there's kit and caboodles. We don't use most of it. And I don't know if it's the same for you. We'll go through what you use as well. But for me, on a weekly basis, if I've got YouTube, a video job, a stills job, for example, I can pretty much guarantee I will use my Blackmagic 6K with my 18 to 35 for YouTube. That's all I ever use for YouTube. It stays on there. When we come to the video job, same camera, but a Zeiss lens because it's a bit nicer. For stills, I'll use my one camera and one lens, one light and a reflector. Now, the lens I use all the time was a 90, but I'm actually moving more towards a 65 as my sort of taste evolves.
You are jonesing for the zoom, aren't you?
Only for portrait work, though, for ease of use. But yeah, so the 45 to 100 or whatever, I can't remember what it is. Fuji's got a zoom lens, it's pretty banging. That'll probably be my portrait lens. And then for stills, it was a 90mm for everything, but I'm getting in closer and wider nowadays, and we're using a 65. I'm liking the look of that at the moment. So 65mm lens, 100mm prime video lens for videos, and the YouTube lens, which stays at 18mm. Mm-hmm. So it might as well be an 18mm prime.
And two camera bodies.
Two camera bodies, one light. Oh, and a video light as well. Although I do tend to use a lot of window light now it's summer again.
Yeah.
Like, why get a light out when you can open the blinds? Although we have just had to close them for this because of the haze. But what about you? What's your, like, most used?
Well, again, 6D with the Sigma Art 50mm.
Yeah.
Almost exclusively.
Yeah.
Stills. Occasionally, the 24mm that's currently sat on this camera will jump on the second camera. So I've got, again, you know, the rule of, if you're having two lenses and they're both primes, one should be double the focal length of the other. Is that so? We've got 24mm on one, 50mm on the other. That's kind of my go-to still setup. Generally speaking, with speed lights through, again, the same kind of soft boxes because the reason the fast, because when you're on a fast-moving set, you haven't got time to mess about. The reason I have two rigs on the video side is that gimbal rig almost never changes. So it's a Pocket 4K on the RS2 with the Sigma 18-35. That's a static. So that's the gimbal rig, and that almost never changes. And then this one, either 24mm if I need a wider shot, or the 50 to 100, again, on another Pocket 4K. And that's kind of that. And that's kind of my go-to.
What do you use more, the static or the gimbal?
Gimbal, almost for almost everything. Because again, it's, you know, statics are great, but again, it's stuck in one place. Whereas it's just that little bit of movement sometimes. Yeah. And that's 99%. Of the shoots I would do or shop.
And how many years have you been running the Blackmagic camera?
Since 2019, so 6 years now.
6 years. And how many years the 6D?
Since 2013.
Oh.
12 years.
12 years.
Dinosaur.
Many shutter blowouts?
One.
One. That's
only one. Over two cameras, over 13 years.
Yeah.
12 years to only have one shutter failure. That's the only money I've had to spend on those cameras.
That's a good investment.
Decent ROI, I think, on
yeah.
that.
It's interesting because despite having all this kit, I mean, we did a job last week where we filled the entire Subaru with kit, and I used two lights with reflectors. I mean, reflectors are my go-to modifier.
Mm.
Video lights, these were. We used a flag and a silk.
But that's a different mindset because when you go in on set to a job and you're shooting in your own studio. You can't just nip back and get the one.
Yeah,
you
know what I
mean? You have to put everything, you have to take everything, knowing what your general go-to will be. But they say, oh, could we just? Have you just got the thing in the car? And like the answer should be yes, because you should bring everything with you. So the reason I bought, an estate car is completely unglamorous. You know, should have bought the hatchback, but no. The estate car is more practical and more sensible because you can just set the tonneau cover off and just load it up, man.
Yeah.
Even though knowing I'm going to use one camera, one on a static, couple of lights, happy days.
Yeah. And, you know, so, but going back to what we do use, if I had to buy camera kit today, knowing what I know now, I would buy the Fuji, the Cambo, the 65, that'd be one set. And I'd buy the Blackmagic and the 18-35. That'd be another set. One Scoro pack. One head. And that, what we're looking at there, so 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 19, 20, 21,000 Yeah, it's quite a lot of money, actually. I thought, yes. I thought it was going to come into something cheap.
No. Right, so,
21 grand.
I think the takeaway from this, if you want to do this kind of stuff professionally and you want a cheap startup business, this is not the one.
Yes, 21 grand, and that'd be my setup. Unfortunately, I spent considerably more than 21 grand on all the kit. And we do use it. It does all get used eventually, but just not regularly.
Yeah.
If I lived in London, I'd spend 21 grand. That'd be my go-to kit. No, 23 grand, I'd have two heads with a backup head. And then we'd rent anything extra.
Yeah.
And then for you, it'd be what? How much are these cameras each? 3 grand with all the rigging and
lenses? Yeah. I mean, so, you know, probably 6 G's in the cams. And then again, the pair of 6 D's, I mean, what were they?
Grand,
a couple of grand each, back 1800 quid each, I think, back in the day, something like that. So I'm probably about 10.
Yeah. But today you could get it for.
Oh, mate, like four? Less, probably. I mean, I think these run about 550. Now, yes, you've got to rig them out. So it's called the cameras. A grand each.
Yeah.
Lenses are now cheaper, so they're probably 3 grand for the video rigs.
Yeah. Grand for the stills.
And about grand for the stills, yeah. So, you know, 4.5 grand, yeah. quite reasonable, I think.
It's not bad, is it? It's about 22.
Well, it's still less than the price of an R5, so.
Yeah, exactly. And you know.
You know, and that's a whole lot of kit that can do a whole lot more than that can, so.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, all this kit and, like, barely use any of it.
No, I mean, it's like many things. I mean, we were discussing earlier, look, I've got too many watches now.
Yes.
Because I've got more.
What are you wearing today? What's on the wrist today?
Oh, well, today, this is, again, a bit of retail therapy because of broken hearts and stuff. A Bell & Ross today. Again, just love Pilot watches. And
yeah,
I've always wanted one, never pulled the trigger, and then circumstances, and I did.
Nice. You know, and just for a...
just for a size of wrist check.
Yeah, I've got my youngest son's Casio watch on because he wants...
Which is god tier among watches. Like, you can't, if you're remotely into watches, you have to own a Casio.
Yes.
I do own one, but...
But this is not the one you want to own. So I've got, what's my one?
The F91W.
Yes, the absolute
legend,
gold
legend,
standard
legendary
watches.
Watch.
Hit my youngest son saw that and went, I'd like a watch like that. And I just went, go on then, I'll swap you. So we swapped. So he's got my watch and I've got his watch. This does not have the functionality I need, like alarms.
No, it doesn't. But I have the one G-Shock that does all that, but I've never used any of it. I occasionally use a stopwatch on it because you just use your phone for all that stuff now.
Yeah, see, I hate my phone. I hate phones. I had an Apple Watch for years I wore daily, mostly because if I walked near my laptop, it unlocked it.
Yeah.
And that was useful on set, but I hate it. So I've got rid of, well, I've not got rid of it, I just put it to one side. I'm going to get a new G-Shock though to replace the F whatever it is I had because
G-Shocks are awesome. I mean, it's one of those, like, when you've got like pretty watches, like, despite the fact they're better built and they've got sapphire crystals so you can't scratch the glass and all this good stuff, you're still aware that it's quite an expensive thing.
Yes.
I remember you had a beautiful Tag Heuer Carrera.
I had a couple of nice watches. I've sold them all, and I put the money instead into stocks and shares,
which is a sensible thing. Because, mine's all still sat on my dresser.
Well, my problem is, look how scratched this is.
Yeah,
like that's wrecked.
Yeah, a bit of poly watch and a bit of time left for me.
But like, I was so aware of wearing an expensive watch in terms of damaging it because I'm so clumsy, and I also like. All my clothes are ruined. Like everything I own is ruined because I don't go, oh, don't go underneath that car in your new shirt. I just go, I'm going under the car.
Yeah.
Finesse.
There's certain things that I do and don't sort of spend money on. I mean, money's hard enough earned, let's be honest.
Yep.
I remember it was 2005, no, 2006, first time I ever went to Vegas. And I'm not a gambler, as you know, I don't even know how to gamble. I don't understand how gambling works. All I know is that the house wins, so
yes,
why would you bother?
It does.
And I remember saved up a little bit of money to have a bit of a flutter because the person I was working for at the time loves to gamble. Like I've seen like put too much money on just black or red.
Yeah.
And it didn't come up. You know, I'm like, oh, I don't know how I'd recover from that. And I had enough money and came back with the Carrera that was on my wrist every single day for 17 years, never left my wrist. And then the crown broke and I had to take it in and have it serviced and it was like £480. I'm like, you can buy a really nice watch for 450 quid. I'm like, what do you mean just service it? Like, never understood it. And then I started looking at the wider world of horology and got bitten by the bug a bit.
Well, you don't really lose much money on watches, do you?
Yeah. You do. Well, it depends what watches you get. And again, this is not practical watch advice at all. I mean, Christ, I own Panerais. if you want to buy an investment, that is not the watch. No. If you want to buy an investment, get yourself a Panda, a Rolex, and you know, you'd probably be set. But buy the thing because you like it, not because you think it's going to be a good investment.
Yes.
Because you know what? 99% of the time, it ain't going to be.
Right. I almost looked out at my watches.
And that's a rarity. I mean, obviously, during the pandemic, things went through the roof.
Yeah.
Like everything doubled, quadrupled in price. I mean, like, you used to be able to buy an OP or Oyster Perpetual, you know, your standard, as you'd know, Rolex.
Yeah.
For like, you know, $3,000-$4,000. Now they're like $8,000-$9,000. It's like, the watch hasn't changed. It's the same thing. It's just, Dad, why has the price gone up so much? Because they can.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it?
You know, it's just... there's that sort of thing. Sorry, we're off for a bit of a tangent.
No,
it's photography, but again, you spend your money how you will. You know, I mean, I just, for me, I mean, as a nerd and as an engineer, it's just, I love mechanical watches. It's just the mechanism of the universe. I can sit there for hours just watching the hand sweep. I don't know if you've ever seen Grand Seiko. Seiko's really fancy stuff. It's called Grand Seiko. And they, if you look at the spring drive, because every watch has a tick or like a beat per minute sort of thing. Now, your standard's like 18,000 beats per minute. So this is the nerdy bit, kids. Really good ones are like 28,000. These things, it's completely seamless. It's just, there's no, the slightest, it's just, it's mesmerizing. You could just sit and watch that for hours. And it's just like, wait, what a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think, I like watches, but I don't like having money left on the dresser. And I never wore mine.
Again, I've never not had a watch on my wrist. I mean, again, up until 2006, when I somehow looked into that, I always had a watch, but never anything, but never even dreamed I could own an expensive watch. Mm. And I only did that as well. This is money I was going to, you know, up the table anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm one of the few people that came back with Vegas with something, you know, and that was like a game changer. And then, you know, it's like, as I get a bit older and stuff happened, I've had significant birthdays and, you know, what better way to mark the passage of time than with something that's literally there to mark the passage of time?
Yeah, I can see that. That sounds like a good rationale as any.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's my justification. Anyway,
yeah, you see, I've never been to Vegas. I don't gamble. I do play the lottery, which is, of course, is gambling. I win the lottery on average once every other week.
Is it like the tenner? Or it's not even a tenner now, is it? It's like a share of like whatever.
£2.80.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's rare recently that I go a week without winning.
Now, do you consciously play the lottery, or do you do what I do? You signed up for it, and it's on direct debit.
Yeah, yeah.
You just get the odd notification every so often. See, to me, I don't feel like I'm playing or gambling because I'm not participating in it. I mean, I'm giving them what, £2.50 a week or whatever it is that to do it. I do like the thing in the Euro Millions because, you know, it's almost the Mary Samsonite rule. It's like, what's the chances of a girl like you and a guy like me? Like 120, more like 1,000,000 to 1. Well, so what you're saying is there's a chance.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, I mean, the chances of winning the lottery is obviously something like, however, how many 100,000,000,000 to 1 or whatever, but
Someone's
got to win it.
So that's the gambler.
I mean, if it's me, mate, you know, we're, you know, neither of us working again. So.
If you see the podcast, rapidly stop.
Or, you know, from a beach in Antigua.
Yeah.
You kind of know what's happening, you know, because you can actually afford a crew then.
That'd be, mate.
That'd be awesome. Amazing.
Yeah. Don't know what I'd do if I win the lottery.
I believe I would like to do, like, you know, we've spoken about, you know, if again, if Mr. Rattenborough's listening, I'm available. I'd like to go and do that, like document the planet.
That'd be pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be like the most amazing retirement ever, just traveling the world and, you know, documenting, you know, the planet, the wildlife, and what an amazing rock we live on.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. The thing is, I don't know what I'd do if I, like, there's things I do at work already that are financially pointless. But I do think so, I like doing them.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I'll just carry on doing what I was doing anyway. Like, I mean, I don't have to do the YouTube channel. I don't have to do the photography business.
No, but
I've got other interests.
You know, I think you do enjoy your role as an educator.
I do. There was a very long phase of my life where I was going to be a primary school teacher. That was the plan. I quite enjoyed the idea of that. Then I worked in special educational schools for a while and I really enjoyed that. It's much more challenging. I don't know what I'd do. Maybe I'd just fuck off.
You just bleep that out later.
Never hear from me. Yeah.
Potty mouth Scott strikes again.
Now, speaking of which, bleeping that out later, have you noticed anything about this week's podcast? Because potentially, and I'll put up a bit of text here if it's not the case, this has been edited by AI.
Yes.
Now, so far, AI has offered me nothing. Nothing. Like every time Photoshop AI's got it, doesn't work properly. This looks like it is going to work. And here's what I'm hedging my bets on. We filmed two podcasts today. And we normally would have done one and then, you know, proxy files, editing, all the rest of it would be the day's work. We've got two done. And if this AI editing works, by the end of today, we'll have two rendered.
And you'd have saved half a day's work.
Half a day's work. We don't have to build proxy files because we don't need them.
Nope.
I don't have to listen to the entire podcast again because we don't need it. I do have to listen to the first one though, because we stopped and started quite a few times because of distractions mainly caused by me.
And we filled up a drive.
Oh, we filled up a drive as well, which is also my fault because I didn't change my camera from high quality to low quality because, believe it or not, we shoot podcasts on the lowest possible quality.
On the 6K?
On the 6K.
On the lowest but one on the 4Ks.
Yes, because you just don't need that much quality in a podcast, apart from with the audio. But yeah, AI, DaVinci Resolve AI features are actually useful. I'm actually pleased they're here. I'm happy they're here. What it's going to mean is, instead of me spending hours editing a podcast, or you hours editing a podcast, we could do something else more fun, because editing a podcast is not fun.
No, actually making the podcasts, I quite enjoy.
Making the podcast, good times.
As uncomfortable as I am, clearly, to anyone that's been watching these, yeah, in front of a camera, you know, it's kind of fun. You know, and I can't believe we're in season three, man.
I know, especially as just a bit of a whim.
Yeah. But no, honestly, like, again, I mean, as you know, I'm a big fan of Blackmagic, always have been. And again, like, the pace, Resolve has moved on since I started using it in 2019. It's just leaps and bounds. Just, I mean,
this latest batch of updates are insanely good.
Yeah, you know, and again, there's like, it's just, they just keep on pushing. If you're listening to Adobe, you know, wake up.
Quite. But yeah, AI, obviously, we'll see how it goes, I suppose.
Now, I'm not going to say it's completely never given a value. I mean, I did send you my Funko Pop earlier.
Yes.
You have to pop that up on screen. That's hilarious.
We do you know what? We'll make one for me and it'll be the thumbnail.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
Well, that'll be great.
We'll do that after this. Right. I think that's probably a good a time as any to end this.
Yeah. So once again, it's goodbye from me.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.